Hey friend, welcome to the Ashley O Show. My name is Ashley O'Connor and I started this podcast when I became a nurse because I wanted a space where I could be honest about my experience caring for others. I knew I couldn't be alone. I'm talking about the fear, the obstacles, the trauma, and the challenges of working insane shifts, learning more than I thought possible, witnessing the most heart-wrenching and the most beautiful moments in a life, and doing it all while trying to take care of myself. Everyone said it was impossible to be healthy as a caregiver and I just refused to accept that as a reality. Now, I am living as a registered nurse turned health, fitness, and career coach for my fellow nurses and caregivers who are trudging through the same mud, trying to solve the mystery of how to stay healthy in a world that is telling you to put yourself last. The Ashley O Show is a space where nurses and caregivers come together to understand that their identity extends beyond the humans that they care for, where the hardest workers in the room can have honest and authentic conversations about what is holding them back and the changes needed to move forward. I am here to help you fit nutrition, fitness, and self-care into a life built around 12-hour shifts. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's definitely going to be scary, but it's also going to be more beautiful than you ever imagined. So it's time we commit to putting ourselves first, chasing uncertainty, and building stronger lives, careers, bodies, and minds than we thought possible. I'm so glad that you're here, and I cannot wait to see the ways in which we change the world. What is up, my friends? Welcome back to the Ashley O Show, where we talk about life in and outside of the hospital. And today's interview is going to help you do just that. We are digging into belief and grief and loss and how to navigate some of the heavier parts of our jobs and our lives with Reverend Christine. She runs the hospital chaplaincy department at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital. She is an ordained Presbyterian minister, a certified educator within the Association of Clinical Pastoral Education, a seminary professor, and a trained spiritual director. And I promise this episode is for you, regardless of what your belief system looks like today. That's one of the really cool things that we do in our conversation. Christine and I dive into some of the misconceptions around when to call a hospital chaplain, what this resource can actually do for our practice, for our patients, and for ourselves, how nurses can build a belief system that supports them in their practice, and how we can create a boundary between the weight of our work and our life at home. We even talk about the best way to listen and be with others who are processing grief, loss, or pain. And I don't know about you, but they never taught me that practice in nursing school. So this conversation is invaluable. You guys need to listen to the entire episode. You're going to get something out of it. I completely promise you. And when you do, I really would love it if you would share it with another nurse or a healthcare worker or even a friend who could use this information to find a little bit more peace in their life. So let's just commit to growing together. I cannot wait to hear what you guys think of this episode. Let's dive right in. Welcome back, everyone. I have a very special guest that I'm so excited for you guys to connect with. Her name is Christine. I'm going to let her introduce herself because she has such a beautiful story and something that I know you guys are going to connect with so much. So Christine, tell us about yourself, what you do, who you are, and everything in between.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me here. I feel like today I need to start off with my bio saying I am the daughter of a nurse. And so that very much informs my orientation to the world. I am the director of pastoral care at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. So I run the chaplaincy department there. And I also train chaplaincy students and interns and clergy who are interested in learning the art of spiritual care. And a lot of what I like to do with my interdisciplinary colleagues, nursing included, is talk to them about the ways in which they provide spiritual care for their patients. So that's my day job. On the side, I do individual spiritual direction with clients who are looking to really find more meaning and engage in more practices related to spirituality in their own life. And on the side, I do host a newsletter and do some writing, mostly about my work in the hospital and being with patients and being with staff in that meaningful way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I would love to hear what brought you to this path. Like, what brought you to pursue something like becoming a chaplain? I'm so curious how that path looks for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a path that you hear about every day. And I grew up in the church. Our parents went to a Presbyterian church. I forgot to say I'm now a Presbyterian minister, but before that started, I was very interested in serving God. I was a very precocious kid and was attuned to that from a young age. And I really thought the best way to serve God was through medicine. My mom probably helped me to think in that way. And, you know, I would read the Merck Medical Manual for fun as a kid and really was interested in all things medicine. I volunteered as a candy striper back when we wore the red and white pinafores. I'm very grateful that our volunteers now in the hospital don't have to wear that and can wear, you know, regular polo shirts. And then I worked as a EMT for a number of years as well. And it was through those experiences while I was doing, you know, the very minor wound and medical care that we could do in the backs of the ambulances. It was really being with people when they were in distress from the emotional standpoint, you know, holding their hand as they were scared and as it might have been the worst day of their life. And that's a lot of what I wind up doing now. And it was also around that same time that I had my own medical health diagnosis and was in and out of the hospital, had numerous amounts of testing and medication. And, frankly, I was a little dismayed by the bedside staff that were taking care of me and a lot of the physicians that were involved in my care. It's funny because I then later worked at the hospital where I had been a patient. But it was around that same time that an associate pastor at the church I was attending took me out for dinner and just talked about what was going on with me and how it was impacting my relationship with God. And later on, I realized, oh, that was spiritual care. I was having a chance to really talk through about what was going on with me, process it emotionally. And that's what really spurred me forth to give that to others and then to train others in how to do that.
Yeah. Wow. That's such a beautiful linear path, like not linear because
it's didn't always feel that linear. It's linear in retrospect,
but yeah, when you lay it out, it all just sounds like that's where you were destined to go. So I love that you ended up in a space where you can support people the same way that you were supported. For my nurses listening, I, at least when I was practicing, it was a little bit confusing for me when to call a chaplain, when not to call a chaplain, when was the right time. I think I probably missed multiple opportunities to involve your team. So I would love to hear for the nurses how you guys support nurses and also their patients and family and when to call for your services.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say my disclaimer is it will vary based on the setting where your listeners are. So unfortunately, there's not as many chaplains in the outpatient setting yet. And really, I would reach out to it's either called spiritual care, pastoral care, chaplaincy services, reach out to the department in your setting if you're in the hospital and meet them, right? And hear a little bit about what they have to offer. I'm fortunate in that my hospital values chaplaincy and we have a robust chaplaincy department. So we have individuals in-house 24/7. So I tell my nurses, you can call us anytime, day or night, it does not matter. And what I want nurses to know is that you all are spiritual care generalists. So you are doing spiritual care work, even if you don't think that you are. Within the nursing diagnosis, there you can diagnose what spiritual distress looks like. And so I invite you to look for signs of what might be spiritual distress. And it's going to look different for different people, but a few examples might be someone who's crying a lot, just very tearful every time you go into the room. And of course, you're paying attention to them and offering them that care, but you also have a million other things that you're doing. So you don't have the luxury of time to sit there and unpack what's going on for them. So that's a great time to call. Anytime there's a new diagnosis and people are really kind of grappling with what this might mean for them, that can be another opportunity to bring in a chaplain. end of life. Probably about 70 to 80% of what we do is around end of life. I would say the sooner you can involve a chaplain, the better. So sometimes we will get calls for terminal extubations in the ICU about 5 minutes before, you know, the respiratory tech is scheduled to be there. I would say if you know that it's happening that day, or if the family's having to make some difficult decisions, certainly family meetings are a great place to involve chaplains in as well. We try to, in my hospital, we go to every single code and every single trauma. Not that we're doing anything medically, but we are the family support person. And so that way the medical team can focus on being with the individual. We can focus on accompanying the family and all of the emotions that they may be having. And then if it turns out not to be successful or turns into a bereavement visit, we're already embedded in that. One suggestion I do have, and you always want to check with, like I said, with your local spiritual care department, but I suggest not asking the patient if they would like to see a chaplain. And there's a few reasons for that. It feels a little counterintuitive, but just as you wouldn't ask, you know, if you're making a cardiac consult, right? You wouldn't ask, like, would you like to see the cardiologist? No, you just make that consult. You have the power to put that consult in, and then we can come in and introduce ourselves, our services, and do a spiritual assessment in that way. We're never going to throw you under the bus and say, oh, your nurse was saying that you were really cranky today. So that's why we're here, to try to figure out, you know, what's underneath that for you. Because it puts you in an awkward position of having to explain what a chaplain is. And there may be instances where we're going to go anyway. Another example is in my hospital, where the department that does advanced directives. So we may have an order to go and see that patient. And if you, as the nurse, ask, would you like to see a chaplain? And the patient says no, they may have to see us anyway. So there's no way to get that information back. So that's a little bit about how and when I would call. Really, if you have any inkling that this patient that you have could use an extra layer of support, that's a great time. Even if that patient tells you, I'm not religious, I don't believe in any of that junk, that is perfectly fine. I sit with patients that don't believe anything all the time. And we really focus on what is giving them meaning right now and what is weighing upon them. And then for the second part of your question about how nurses can use chaplains, I think that there's some great informal and formal ways to be able to utilize our services. So I teach my interns and my staff, anytime we're responding to a death or to a code or to a really distressing situation, always check in with the nurse, see how they are doing, ask them, you know, what they're going to do after their shift, ask them how their day has been. And the nurse can choose to use that or not. Sometimes it's not helpful because you have a million other things to do and you don't have time to really dwell in how hard that case was. But in case you want to, it is there. Some hospitals have more formal ways as well. We're actually about to be piloting this at our hospital soon. But there are things like Code Lavender, that some hospitals have, where it's not just chaplains. Sometimes it's also integrative health. Sometimes it's social work or psychology, where a staff person needs an extra few minutes. And so we have a little cart, you know, that we would go up with. Another hospital I used to work with, I would go with the massage therapist. She was more popular than I was, and do a quick massage or do a quick prayer or give a cup of tea, those types of things. Another formal way we support nurses in our hospital is, I don't know if you've had anyone talk about Schwartz Center rounds before, but these are a great national rounds organization that are in many hospitals, where it's like a medical rounds, but it's really focused on the healthcare providers' emotions around a case or a topic. And so those are facilitated discussions for anyone to attend. And there's an interdisciplinary panel. And they talk about how tough it is to care for people. And we can't always, you know, go home and talk to our friends and families about what we've experienced any given day. And so being amongst people that really get it, I find helps people to normalize what's going on for them and to give them an opportunity to vent about it, to process it, and to, you know, celebrate it, right? Sometimes there's great joy and success and humor in our work. So having forums where we can speak to that both formally and informally, I think, is really helpful.
Yeah. I don't remember all of those services being available when I was practicing, but I would hope that maybe hospitals are changing to include those things more, because, I mean, that just sounds amazing to have opportunities where we can support healthcare workers as well as patients and family. I think that work is extremely important, but the work that I do now is in supporting healthcare workers, and there's just a lack of support. So
absolutely,
the idea that we could potentially advocate maybe in our own hospitals for this to be something like Code Lavender, I think that that's such an incredible thing that we could maybe implement in different hospitals that don't have it right now. But with your, with the rounds that you were talking about and kind of digging into different cases or getting support that way, that's made me think about how we can start to create that boundary between the weight of our work and our life at home. Mm-hmm. And sounds like maybe engaging with chaplaincy in the hospital is one great way to do that, to get that support. But what are other recommendations for creating the boundary between mm-hmm. what we carry at work and what we bring home to our families?
Mm-hmm. That's a great concept that I think can be really simple for people to engage in. And I would also say it's a spiritual concept, right? Of boundarying your time so that you can be fully present at work and fully present elsewhere in a way to care for yourself. I think back to COVID, as I often do. And I think, you know, all of us in healthcare are still, you know, very much reeling from that, from a mental health standpoint. And, you know, one of the great ways that a lot of people change time was literally, you know, stripping down in the parking lot, taking clothes off, taking shoes off. And I know people that, you know, had did that before and did that after, you know, coming in and changing your shoes, changing your clothes, almost like if you remember Mr. Rogers, right? As soon as he came in, he had his outdoor sweater on, he had his indoor sweater on. I've talked to people that an important ritual for them is taking a shower and just kind of washing off everything that happened to them during that shift or during that day. Other things that I've recommended to people is you'll see I have some bracelets on here. When I'm at work, I wear these bracelets. And when I'm leaving, I leave them in my car and I leave them there. And it's kind of a mental cue for me that, okay, now I'm switching gears. Others have used essential oils as well. Like you may have one scent that you use as you're gearing up for the day, and then another scent, you know, on your way home that you keep in your purse to smell. I have also found just taking a few moments of meditation, either when I get to work or right before I leave or enter my house, especially because I have young children. So there's not a lot of quiet to be found once I, you know, walk through those doors, can really help to center and ground me. I think this is a place where people can create their own ways of, and I would say it's really a ritual, their ritual for ending the day and for closing the day in terms of work and helping with that boundary. People tell me that, especially those that have commutes, you know, listening to something uplifting or completely distracting is also very helpful for them to go from, you know, one phase of their day into another phase.
Yeah. And these might be things that we're already doing, but maybe we're
absolutely
not thinking about them mm-hmm. as like a ritual or as something therapeutic or spiritual in so many ways. Like, we don't necessarily categorize it that way, but if we did, we may put more value in it, or it mm-hmm. may just help us mentally create that boundary. Mm-hmm. So use things that you might already be doing. I love that advice because it's so easy to implement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just about having the intention, but yeah, you're not having to do anything more.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. With everything that we're talking about, one thing that always comes to mind is, for so many people, I think, one, we associate a chaplain with one type of religion. I think that is one boundary that exists, is that we just think, if our patients believe in God, then we call the chaplain, and if they don't, we don't. But for my listeners who maybe wish they had some sort of belief system but currently don't, and maybe they started listening to this episode and thought this wasn't for them because they don't have a belief system necessarily that they subscribe to, how can we discover what that belief system looks like for us if we don't mm-hmm. already have one, or if we just want to lean a little bit harder into a belief system that we do have? I think that faith mm-hmm. is so important for our mental health. So I would love to hear your take on that.
Yeah. So I think it's a helpful distinction to make between spirituality and religion, right? So for some people, religion helps them to get to a spirituality. For others, that is not the case. And religion comes with so much baggage, right? And especially based on someone's upbringing and societal issues. And there can be a lot of toxic aspects and traumatic aspects to religion. So if that is in your listeners' history, I invite them to, if they need to do more processing around that, to work with a therapist. There's also individuals like me that do spiritual direction that can help untease and unpack some of that a little bit more. But there's also plenty of entrees into spirituality that are separate from religion. So my very simple definition of spirituality that I like to tell people is it's really three prongs. It's how we connect with ourselves. It's how we connect with others, maybe our friends or family, and then how we connect to the greater world around us. For some people, that might be God. For others, it might be, you know, just being in this universe or in this particular world. And what you're doing as a healthcare provider is you are looking for signs of spiritual distress. And spiritual distress occurs when any of those elements feel broken in a way. So for instance, if I am not able to connect with myself because I have this, you know, new diagnosis that is really just spinning my world around and changes the way in which I've always thought about myself or my body, that could be potential for spiritual distress, which is a great time to call in the chaplain. Or for yourself, if you're noticing for yourself, it's a great time to, you know, seek help of others. Same thing with if there's a break in our relationship with others, right? So, which again, we all saw during COVID, we weren't able to be in the physical presence of so many of our loved ones for a time. So that's going to cause a rift. And then the last one, if a patient is, or a nurse is, wrestling with God, and I see a lot of anger at God in the hospital. That's one of the big things that I see. You know, that is going to also bring about some distress. So for individuals that are really hoping to, you know, look into what is my spirituality, what is my path in this, one of the things I would encourage you to think about, and this is from a theologian named Paul Tillich, is what is your ultimate concern? Like, what gives your life meaning? And I ask this to a lot of patients, so I've heard a lot of answers over the years. A lot of times it's family. A lot of times it's vocation, or, you know, and I can imagine a lot of your listeners, it's the meaning that they get from doing the work of nursing can be a lot of what gives them that sense of purpose in their lives. For others, it may be, you know, being out in nature, or being affiliated with a certain cause. For others, I hear a lot about the arts and creativity. So it's really thinking about what is it that gives me meaning and purpose. And then the other question I encourage people to think about is what is it that you value, right? So even if you were to come up with like the three top things that you say, this is really what I value above all else. That can be a hard question to answer, especially when we think about all of the values in our lives. So a simple way I suggest doing it is, what do you value in a friend? Because sometimes that helps us to point to, okay, this is what I value ultimately, if you can pinpoint it in a particular person. And then there are, you know, like we talked about before, simple practices that people can try. And a lot of times they are things that they're already doing that can help them to connect with themselves, to connect with others, to connect to the divine or the universe, or that can really help them to live out their values. So it can be something as simple as, it doesn't have to be an hour's worth of meditation, because that feels very daunting, especially if you've never meditated before, right? But it can be something as simple as, you know, I have my cup of tea right here. It can be something as simple as being mindful when I'm drinking my tea, rather than just gulping it down as I'm chasing, you know, my kids around their house trying to get them onto the bus. It can be something where I am just taking a moment to connect and to notice and to be present. So just as one example of a practice that someone can already do, and just infuse it with that intention and that sacredness.
Yeah. It makes me just think, I think we overcomplicate the process sometimes. Like I don't myself subscribe to any specific religion, but I've been exploring like what my own belief system looks like and what spirituality looks like for me. And I think for a long time, as I was exploring and trying to connect with something bigger than myself, I made it really complicated. I was like, I need this many rituals, and it doesn't feel like it has enough rules or boundaries in order to be an actual belief system. But I love that you're making it so simple that it's something that we can just practice day to day. It doesn't have to be this whole, like, we don't need a whole manual or book to have a belief system, and that it can really help support us in this job that is extremely difficult and taxing. Like, having some type of belief system or faith or spirituality is really helpful in a job that takes so much from you. And would you say, so as you were talking about spiritual distress, I think of things like compassion fatigue and burnout when it comes to healthcare workers. Is that often a sign? Is that another sign of spiritual distress for some of us? Like, those two symptoms, I mean, they're much larger, of course, but is that also a sign of spiritual distress? And kind of how can we move through those two pieces as well?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it absolutely can be. It depends on the level in which it's coming up for a person, right? So, and there's actually a nursing diagnosis category for spiritual distress. And it talks about the fact that something is going on that is kind of invading a person's whole being and whole way of looking at the world is my summary of what it says in more complex language than that. And so that would definitely come out in compassion fatigue, in burnout, especially if like some of your listeners, they've always derived meaning and pleasure from their work, right? And then to have their work be the thing that is draining them of joy and causing harm and physical harm, you know, as well as the emotional harm. Absolutely. That can throw someone into a tailspin of the other question we hear a lot when spiritual distress is going on is the question of why. Right. Sometimes it's a why is this happening? We use the term existential meaning making. So anytime we're trying to make meaning of something and we can't figure it out, that is often an element of spiritual distress as well. Or just really wishing that something is not the way that it is in any particular moment. And so absolutely burnout, compassion fatigue, all of those types of situations and diagnoses could absolutely be another form of spiritual distress. And it's so hard, and there's no easy solution to any of those, right?
Yeah. But maybe it's starting to lean into some type of belief system, or if you currently do believe or you have a religion that you practice or spirituality, maybe just including that in your practice and trying to recover from compassion fatigue or burnout would be beneficial. Maybe that's something that you're not doing right now that could help to help you move through those really heavy things that we experience.
And I think the first step is to name it, right? To acknowledge, oh, okay, this is what I'm going through. This is spiritual distress. It has a name. I didn't even know this. Or this is compassion fatigue. Yeah. Because I think if we name it, we can tame it. Not as quickly as we'd like often, but at least it gives us a foothold and helps us to know what resources may be out there for people to tap into.
Yeah, that's so true. So true. Just to acknowledge that it's there and give it a name is so powerful. Okay. To just pivot a little bit, I know that so many nurses and myself included, one of the hardest things is to sit with someone and listen when they are processing grief or loss or pain. And it's just not something that, at least in my nursing school, we did not talk about. There was no role playing. There was no practice. It was sort of just thrown into the practice of nursing and being like, okay, these people are dealing with some of the worst things in their lives most of the time, and just trying to figure out how to sit with them and help them in any way. What is your advice for nurses and how they can be a little bit better at listening and being with others and helping them process their own grief or loss?
Yeah, I think that is one of the hardest things that nurses are asked to do in the midst of everything else that's going on is having to carve out that space to, you know, be there emotionally and spiritually for your patients. And this, in not just nurses struggle with this. Every time I get asked about my work, I get asked this question because it's so hard to know what to do, right? We're all well-meaning people and we want to be able to help those who are suffering. And it can be really hard. One piece of advice I have, again, it sounds a little counterintuitive, but I recommend saying less. I had a professor in seminary who used to say, you know, in the face of crisis, show up and shut up. And I've always remembered that because there are times where unknowingly we might do harm with our words. So there are a lot of, you know, kind of religious platitudes that people sometimes say, especially in the face of grief or loss, such as like, oh, everything happens for a reason, or, you know, he's in a better place. And while you may believe that is true for yourself theologically, and that's in line with your own belief system, when we put our beliefs onto someone else, that can silence the pain that they're going through. To say less is more helpful than saying, you know, the wrong thing. Certainly, I encourage you to, you know, say things like, you know, do you want to talk about him? Do you want to tell me about him? Or simply acknowledging, yes, this is very hard. This is going to be the hardest day of your life that you're going through, rather than trying to focus on the positive, right? Focus on the silver lining of things. Really just acknowledge this is so difficult and matching your patients where they are, I think, is also key, right? And so sometimes especially around death, this was something that surprised me when I first got into this work. Sometimes there's some lightheartedness, right? Like the family sitting around the bedside after their loved one has died and, you know, they're laughing and telling stories, right? And so being able to match that. And also, you know, when they're crying, being able to, you know, offer them that comfort of that simple presence. My interns are always so surprised when they show up and shut up, like I've said, when they're not saying much at all. And then the family, after they're leaving the hospital, after they've said goodbye to their loved ones, they turn to the chaplain and say, oh, thank you so much. This was so helpful having you here. My interns always say to me, I didn't really do anything. And so it's really a lesson that your presence is enough. There's not much that you need to say, but just bearing witness to what the family is going through or that patient is going through can make all the difference in the world to the family.
Yeah, I really appreciate that advice because I think, yeah, there's a tendency to fill silence with noise, I think, mm-hmm. for people just in general, or to try and make people feel better when that's not always the appropriate thing to do when they're dealing with loss or grief or anything heavy. It's not fair for us to dismiss those feelings, but that's like our tendency is just to try and make
right. It's often our own anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. And we're all helpers, right? We got into this to help people we want to fix. And so we're coming from a good place, having to recognize, oh, that's actually the opposite of what this person may need in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, the other piece with that, I just think of, I think so many nurses or healthcare workers, they almost avoid going into the room altogether because they're so afraid to say the wrong thing. But if the best thing that we can do is actually just be there and not have mm-hmm. to say very much, it takes a little bit of that pressure off mm-hmm. where, I mean, you don't need to walk into the room, just be silent and just hope right, that somebody right, talks right. to you. We can mm-hmm. engage, but for the most part, it's not like there's a script that you need to follow or something right. perfect that you have to say.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's nothing that you can say that's going to make the situation better. Yeah. And sometimes recognizing that can be liberating in a way because it takes some of the pressure off. And so really what you can do is honor the human condition of what they're going through. Yeah. And honor the suffering. And sometimes, you know, not even needing words, but a simple nod, you know, a warm smile, a light tap on, you know, the back and really checking in. The other thing I recommend, and nurses are good at this, is checking in with the family in terms of their own needs. Have they eaten? You know, can you get them something from the pantry? If someone's there alone, suggesting that they, you know, if they call in a friend or a family member, you know, to be with them. So some of those, you know, practical logistical pieces of caring can certainly come through as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And those I think we are good at, like you said. Mm-hmm. Those are a little easier, but keep doing those things.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think I could probably ask a million questions, but I would love it if you could leave listeners with any piece of advice that you think that somebody might need to hear today, or just from our conversation, something that they can take with them into this week.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly if people are feeling like the spiritual distress or the compassion fatigue conversation resonated with them, I would say you are not alone. And there are resources out there. And I encourage you to take advantage of those. And for nurses in general, I think it is great work that you all do, and you are fantastic at taking care of other people. And so I really encourage you to take care of yourselves as well, in whatever way that may come up. For some of you, that may be ritual or engaging in kind of some spiritual care practices. And for others, it may be something completely else, but really stressing to your audience that they take good care of others. Now it's time to also take good care of themselves.
Yeah, that's our big motto around here. So I appreciate that you're just reinforcing that because it just makes you better at being a caregiver and helping others is if you take care of yourself. So I love the reminder. How can listeners reach out to you, connect with you, or work with you if they are looking for something like spiritual guidance? Like, how can we reach out with
Sure. I have a website. It is my first name, Christine, and then V as in Victor, and then my last name, Davies, ChristineVDavies.com. So you can find me there. You can also sign up for my weekly newsletter where I do sometimes share different spiritual practices or different ways of being with people in suffering. And that is at Journeying Alongside at Substack, but it's also on my website, or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. And I'm happy to, if someone is looking for a spiritual director and I'm not a good fit, I will walk you through how to find someone that may be. Maybe you want to meet with someone in person. Maybe you want to meet with someone who is affiliated with a certain faith tradition. And I can help you find some of those referrals as well.
Awesome. I will put all of that in the show notes so that you guys can easily connect. And if you do listen to this episode and you find something helpful, please share it with some of your peers, share it on social media and tag both of us so that we can thank you. But Christine, thank you so much for joining us today and pouring into our listeners.
Yeah, such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, you guys. I will see you in our next episode. Thank you so much for listening in and committing to your growth in a world that is telling you to stay small. Seriously, it means the absolute world to me. If this episode hit home for you, it would be amazing if you could share it with your friends or fellow caregivers and tag me at Ashley O Show so that I can personally thank you. That way, we can build an army of nurses, healthcare workers, and caregivers who are changing the narrative around what is possible and healing the system from the ground up. I will see you next time. I love you, and I am always rooting for you.